Hey, good afternoon, everybody. I'm delighted to have Barbara Boyd on the channel for the very first time. And I have been watching the coverage of the escalation with Russia, Ukraine on the Promethean Action channel. And if you want to subscribe to that channel, the link is in the description box, and I will put the link in the live chat as well now. And please get your questions ready, because Barbara's really on point with what's happening behind the absolute BS that we're seeing in the mainstream media. So, of course, we saw the drone swarm. We saw the bridges come down. We saw the attempt on Putin when he was in his helicopter. And one of the most important things, I think, is the fact that they knew the nuclear bombers were out in the open because of the agreement they've got with America. It's like America passed them this information, probably assisted in the act. All the time, Trump's trying to speak to Putin and get peace going. So who is really in control here of what's going on, Barbara?
Well, I think this may have been a case where the auto pin not only gave us these crazy pardons, but they also gave us this operation. They say it was planned for 18, 20 months, which puts it back in the Biden administration. Now, then you ask the question, okay, well, was the United States and the Trump administration involved? We say, as opposed to every pundit in the world, we think it's genuine that the White House didn't know. Now, what does that mean? Well, in the United States, if the president issues a finding, and it can be the auto pin, who's the president, i.e. the vacant Biden administration 18 months ago, to the intelligence community and to everybody else, some people who are still, you know, Trump has not cleaned out the deep state. We just posted on our website a statement by General Michael Flynn saying that he believes that this is a deep state operation in disobedience to the president. And the way we take Trump's silence over the last 48 hours until his conversation with Putin is essentially, who the hell did this? And what am I going to do about it? And how do we prevent the type of escalation which obviously Russia is going to undertake here? Now, Trump just spoke to President Xi of China this morning, at least in the Chinese press. The White House has not said anything about it yet, as far as I know. I assume Trump will be posting on Truth Social shortly about that conversation. Everybody says it's about trade. I believe it's about de-escalating this entire situation if China can do something about it. In General Flynn's statement, I thought it was quite important. He went back and actually reflected on the Cuban Missile Crisis and the bravery and courage of both Prime Minister Khrushchev and John F. Kennedy at that point in time, both of whom had advisors around them who were hardliners, who said, no matter what, you've got to respond, you've got to go for maximum options, you've got to go nuclear at this point. And both of them basically figured out a way to get out of and flank that particular situation heading towards war. And there's a book about that which attributes the assassination of JFK precisely to that particular crisis. I don't know exactly how Russia is going to respond. I expect a very, very harsh response. Russia right now, which most people don't know, is actually proceeding to win the war, which is why you get these desperate sort of tactics out of everybody who's stake their political futures really on this is the fight for Western civilization and all the other BS. Which they actually use in promoting this, democracy versus autocracy. I believe, quite frankly, that your government had a lot more to do with this than Donald Trump in the White House. You know, the British special forces are very, very much embedded totally with the Ukrainian intelligence services and with the Ukrainian military. They've done time after time special operations of this type, terrorist type hybrid warfare, operations. And part of what we're calling for at Promethean Action is Trump has to do some drastic things here to really clean it up. The special relationship should be ended. It's been a disaster for the United States. And it's been a disaster for the British people. It's just this crazy machine, which was set up after World War II and then came into its present form after the Soviet Union collapsed when they set up this new kind of imperial framework. And it needs to be dismantled. We need to go back to exactly what Brexit was all about there. We need to go back to sovereign nation states, forming alliances based on really mutual interests, not interest for some kind of, you know, globalist, you know, entity which actually wants to run the entire world. And that's what the real battle is right now across the world, is a fight to once again have sovereign nation states. Marco Rubio referenced this just last night in a speech at American Compass, where we look at our mutual interests and we figure out how to do things based on what our populations actually want. No world government can represent the people out there, the average citizens of all of the countries of the world. And I think the real agenda which Trump wants is some type of modus vivendi between, you know, Russia, China, India, and the United States, four powers who collectively have the technological expertise, the population, and the means to actually overcome this imperial force. So that's what we're really trying to put into motion here. And obviously, they're not giving up. They're still fighting, and they would even blow up the world, I believe, to hold on to power.
As we saw in the calculations of the Biden administration, whereby there was such and such a risk of nuclear war if they took it this far, and they decided to do it anyway. So you're saying, you know, this was planned back in the Biden administration, and the fact that it's unfolded, you know, probably with British intelligence, probably with American intelligence. Well, that's the deep state side of the government, the globalist side of the government. And you're being asked whether you think that Lindsey Graham needs to be forced out of office.
The guy needs to be investigated. The guy, I mean, I've heard through the rumor mill that there is an active Justice Department investigation of him at this point, because according to Larry Johnson and others, millions of dollars have flowed into his account via a money laundering operation from the Ukrainians through Latvia into his accounts. I don't know if that's true or not, but Larry Johnson's a former CIA analyst. He's had some really good exclusive scoops in the world before. He said that last night. Sometimes he's been wrong, but I think it's really worth following up. And the guy needs to, I mean, Steve Bannon is saying the guy should be have his passport pulled. Anything you can do at this point to, I believe, show Putin that we're serious about taking down the deep state. We're not going to tolerate this kind of insane military behavior. And the people really have to manifest that to their Washington representatives. You know, I think there's a kind of disease which comes out of the Potomac River, which kind of addles people's brains. And they seem to, once they get inside Washington, change. And what's remarkable about the Trump movement is that so far, every time things have sort of begun to go astray in the Washington way, that movement has mobilized and insisted that we change things. And we're in the middle of that type of mobilization now. You know, we've got to go back to, if you think about 2 weeks ago or so, Trump and J.D. Vance were saying Russia had a reason for this war. All right. And the reason was that nobody was listening to them, and we were driving right up to their borders. And they've said all of the things just in, you know, a very muted way, which are worth saying. This is a proxy war. You know, it's a proxy war against Russia. And in many respects, it's about the old kind of British strategic dream, British geopolitical, and I separate, obviously, the British people from what happens in that strip of land known as the City of London. You know, basically, the whole idea here is Mackinder's old idea that, you know, he who controls Asia or Eurasia controls the world. And indeed, that's what appears to be going on here, that Russia stands in the way of actually strategic control of Eurasia. They thought they had it under Clinton, where you had Boris Yeltsin, the drunk, you know, actually selling the state to the Harvard boys and George Soros. And they thought they had this and it was all lined up. Putin came in and grabbed his country back from them. And ever since then, he's been a marked man.
But haven't they learned the lessons of history? I mean, Napoleon tried to conquer and pillage Russia with his Grand Army, and look what happened to them. They ended up frozen. And then Hitler did something similar. And you look at Stalingrad and the turnaround on Germany that happened. What is wrong with the collective decision-making of the deep state? They just determined to end humanity because, you know, Hitler didn't have nukes, Napoleon didn't have nukes, but there's nukes aplenty right now.
Well, I think they don't understand culture. It's that simple. In other words, you know, the Russian culture, you know, think about that. Think about, you know, what they lost in World War II. Millions and millions and millions of people, and yet they kept fighting. Look at the Russian citizens jumping up on those trucks and throwing rocks at the drones, risking their lives to do that, okay? Most people in the West at this point that's alien to them in many respects. They can't understand that patriotism, deep patriotism and culture. We're reinvigorating it here in the United States, and it's a powerful spiritual type of force. And that's exactly what these guys have no inkling of, because they're kind of, you know, secular idiots who have all of these religious things they worship, like global warming or the Green New Deal or any of these other insane concepts, population, zero population growth. You know, they cause disasters because of ideological traps and conceptions which have never worked in all of humanity. They're brainwashed, yeah. In other words.
Keir Starmer is absolutely detested here. He's got the lowest ratings in the history of prime ministers. And it seems he's tried to adopt something from Thatcher's book with the Falklands, where her popularity went through the roof. But it's not going to work. He's talking about sending young English men and women to fight in Ukraine. Now, we saw Keir Starmer slobbering all over Biden last year, you know, to get the long-range missiles firing into Russia, which eventually was authorized. And recently, we've seen something similar from Germany, talking about providing technology to fire long-range missiles into Russia. What do you think about Germany's role in escalating this presently?
Well, Germany, you know, basically, if you look at, go back in the period to just after the wall fell, all right, there was an entire mobilization in Germany to once again assert German industry and industrial growth as a parameter of their society and the nation state, quite frankly. And then you had all of those assassinations of key people, allegedly by the Red Brigades and everything else. And then you had Maastricht. And you had Germany giving up its sovereignty, ending the tradition of Bismarck and every kind of pro-American tendency within the German state. So, you know, basically what you have in Germany is a bunch of people right now in the elites who are dedicated to kind of the theory of après moi le déluge. I had the right idea, you know, in terms of world government, that type of thing. And, you know, look at what they're doing to the AfD. It's very similar to the arrests you're having there in Britain for speech, for thought crimes, for everything George Orwell talked about in 1984. So, you know, it's very dangerous. Europe is just ridiculous. It, you know, their economies don't work. They're desperately trying to align or get China to align with them. And they see the defense buildup as a way of actually mobilizing their populations and their economies to head off what could be, you know, given the actual, if you look at where the populations are at, you know, a populist revolution very similar to what's happened with the Trump movement in the United States. So you've got, you know, basically their answer to that is, here we have very funny things going on, like, you know, $20 million studies about how to go out and talk to white men by the Democratic Party, which swears that it has no idea how to talk to men, as if that's some kind of, you know, anthropological new species that we're, what we're looking at and examining and doing. All right. And that's how out of it, you know, the elites are. They're just completely out of it. But like a wounded animal, they're very, very dangerous because we haven't sort of put them in their final resting place. And we've got to actually educate the good-hearted citizens out there who are all fighting in fundamental issues of statecraft. How do you really run a country? How do you do that competently? How do you make an economy actually grow persistently? These are the questions which, you know, we all should be staying up and studying like crazy and figuring it out. And in our country, when we had the revolution, we were very fortunate in that we had a truly educated elite. You know, they spoke several languages. Benjamin Franklin was probably one of the key scientists of the entire world in terms of the discovery of electricity and other such things, collaborating a lot with a very good faction there in England. So we've got to bring our citizens' movement up to snuff here very, very quickly and educate them on the highest concepts. I come out of the movement led by Lyndon LaRouche. I call it the School of Hard Knocks. You know, we set out in the early 1970s to found a political organization around creating a true human renaissance, i.e. like the first renaissance, total discovery, educate ourselves about everything we could find out about the key people in history who led really major movements which had positive impacts on the world. We became what some people in the Reagan White House called the best private intelligence agency in the world because we did it. Our idea was that the citizens should have just as good a briefing as the president gets from the CIA or better. You know, and so we had all the desks which the CIA has, you know, for country by country by country. People specialized, they learned about what was going on in those countries. And we became quite prominent. And then basically the establishment decided these guys are too big for their britches. LaRouche is too big for his britches. And they came after us, you know, like, you know, hell hath no fury. You know, lots of us were sitting there with criminal charges, almost went to jail. I almost went to jail for like, you know, 35 years. This was all based on a, you know, Ramsey Clark was one of LaRouche's lawyers, and he said this was the most meticulous setup he'd ever seen conducted by the federal government in his entire time. And he's the former Attorney General of the United States saying that. So that gives you some idea of what we were up against. But the point is that these ideas, like the American system, which is actually being embraced by Trump right now, Alexander Hamilton's mode of economics, we were working with back in the 1970s. You know, and when we looked at, when we kicked the tires, we kicked big tires, like, you know, with George Bundy and the Ford Foundation and all of those other people, and really figured out who's really running the country. It's not the government. That's not who's running the country. and, you know, the government is simply a tool of these people, and we've got to seize it back for the people. So, you know, that's where kind of my expertise comes from, is going through all that. I was kind of the chief paralegal in all of the LaRouche prosecutions. And boy, did we ever learn a lot. We had federal judges actually looking in George H.W. Bush's safe in the White House for the operational plans for actually coming after LaRouche. So that tells you what a hot ticket he was. And, you know, he died. You know, he has the word extremist as his middle name, as he used to joke. And that's, you know, where I come from and what shapes my thinking very, very much.
So, you know, with Putin being a martial artist and a chess player who's exercised all this discipline in the past, now all of a sudden, you know, we've got bombers that are nuclear capable getting attacked with intelligence provided by the West. Does that put him in a spot now where he's got to up the ante? And does that include the possibility of going nuclear on Ukraine? Because if he goes nuclear on Ukraine, Ukraine has got nothing to respond with. But if he bombs, for example, a manufacturing plant in Germany that's making long-range missiles, then Article 5 might be invoked. So what scenarios do you foresee here, Barbara?
Well, he's got the Arishnik, which is, you know, basically a hypersonic missile, which can give as much destruction in a non-nuclear format as a nuclear bomb. And I strongly suspect that that's what we're going to see in his response. There's no Western capability to shoot down these things at this point in time. And, you know, he's used them sparingly in this conflict so far, but he has used them. And I think that's probably going to be the type of response which you're going to see. And it's devastating. Whatever those things hit, you know, basically, you know, if you go back and look on the Russian websites, you'll see that the destruction is horrendous, very precise. In other words, if I want to take out the Ukrainian command, as long as I know where they are, I could at this point with these. So I think he's got a range of options. I think the response will be very severe. And then we'll have to see. Right now, this business with Europe saying it's going to come in and do terrible things to Russia is a farce. There's no capability to actually do that. It requires the United States to come in. If Trump gets hornswoggled into coming in, that's the end of his presidency, which is why we're saying the primary target here is Donald Trump. You know, from the side of the deep state and the people who are actually running this thing, it has nothing to do in some respects with Putin and Ukraine.
So you've got a question from a viewer here. What's the point of having a nuclear arms treaty with America if they are just going to weaponize it against them?
Well, that's what you see with what the deal is with blowing it up. That's exactly the message which they wanted to convey to people like Iran and other people who we're in negotiations with now.
So there's just going to be no treaties and everything's just going to escalate and the world's going to burn? Is that the direction they want this to go?
Well, there's an answer to this, which, you know, basically LaRouche had a big role in, and Trump is talking about with the Golden Dome. Way back when Reagan came out for the Strategic Defense Initiative, very few people know this history. The idea was to create a shield against nuclear weapons. And if you can succeed in doing that, you give a temporary advantage to the defense in all forms of warfare, obviously. And as technology goes, you know, you're constantly inventing new technologies, and people should continue to do that. That's what mankind does. You know, basically, it gives you a 2 or 3 year time where you might be able to actually come to some sort of peaceful arrangement for the world as opposed to this. Now, Trump is reproposing that in the form of the Golden Dome. Right now, Russia says that they don't see a problem with that, which is very interesting. It means they're also developing the same capacities. So the answer is, you know, advanced technologies. That's the answer to where we could go, provided we get through some of these crises. And when Reagan was doing the SDI, he offered it to the Russians. LaRouche was the guy who carried that in a back channel to the Russian government on behalf of the Reagan administration. And, you know, essentially the answer of Yuri Andropov at this point was not yet. And they actually played a major role in the attacks on the LaRouche movement at that point in time because of the SDI. But the point is that if we could go with this type of framework, again, coming back to who should actually take down the deep state once and for all, there's four nations who, if they actually got together, they could do that, which is the United States, Russia, China, and India. Those, you know, there's a 2018 report out of the House of Lords there, basically targeting exactly that relationship, predicting that that relationship could be devastating for British imperial policy. And again, I emphasize, I'm talking about the city here. I'm not talking about the British people. And the 2018 House of Lords report was called UK foreign policy in a shifting world order. And in it, they laid out all of the things which are happening now in terms of the deep state in Britain and everywhere else. We need censorship. We need basically, there's too many people who believe conspiracy theories. The fact that the population is rising like in Brexit is a big threat. We can tolerate one administration of Donald Trump. We can box him in, but we can't tolerate two. This is Sir Richard Dearlove and all of those great nasty people that you suffer there from the Integrity Initiative and other such, you know, places. So that's the ultimate answer, is you need to get the defense in military affairs more powerful than the offense. And you need to end MAD ultimately, which is a crazy doctrine, mutually assured destruction, which holds all of us hostage. I thought it was really scary that when you look at these pictures of the drone attack, you see fail safe. Now, is that referring to the movie Fail Safe? Or is it referring to some kind of, you know, we want it to be working and without failure? The movie, if people remember it, is a horrible movie about uncontrolled nuclear war where there's a mistake made. And essentially what happens is that the United States launches an attack against the Soviets, which can't be called back for various reasons, despite the fact that the president is sitting in the White House and trying desperately to stop the thing, can't stop it, ends up offering New York as something the Soviets can attack and end the conflict. That's like MAD in working its way out. It's crazy. Well, mankind shouldn't tolerate that.
But aren't you seeing parallels with JFK here? You know, he was going to smash the CIA, you know, which is an arm of the deep state, into pieces. And look what happened to him. You know, I'd like to be optimistic, but look at the lessons of history.
That's up to us. That's up to all you guys out there. That's up to us. Okay. The thing that keeps people from being assassinated is the idea that there's 20 more, which will fill in if that happens. It's called, you know, basically informing them that they can't decapitate the head of a movement because it only makes the movement stronger. And that's what we have to offer, provided we act on that notion.
Okay, well said. So viewers, if you've got any questions for Barbara Boyd, you've got about 20 so minutes left, please put them in the chat. And if you want to subscribe to Barbara's channel, Promethean Action, the channel link is in the live chat. And if you're watching it in replay, it is in the description box. So first question is from Shan. Should Lindsey Graham and Senator Blumenthal be charged with sedition under the Logan Act?
That's something that everybody's floating around. The Logan Act is an ancient, ancient statute. It's been used very rarely. I think the far more interesting angle is the one that Larry Johnson's talking about, which is FARA. You remember that's what was used against Michael Flynn and others. They're not acting on behalf of the United States. They're acting on behalf of a foreign government, a foreign power. So that's where I would tend to look if I were sitting in the Justice Department at this point in time. And I'd be particularly looking at who is paying these people in the Ukraine from the Ukrainian diaspora, which is quite strong. As many people might or might not know, these Ukrainian operations in both Canada and the United States were a huge and cohesive block in bringing down the Soviet Union, and are under levels of intelligence control, and played a big role in the first Trump impeachments and in the sort of coup operation, which was run against President Trump in his first term. So that's where I'd be investigating and looking. How much are the Ukrainians paying? How much is backdoor stuff? How much is the are people who are in the defense community paying? How much is certain lobbying groups for Israel, for example, which has long been Trump's sort of, piggy bank, involved in this operation also? Is some factions of Israel have major holdings in Ukraine? The whole thing gets very complex when you begin to look at the Ukrainian diaspora and what they've got in Canada and what they've got here and how they mobilize around support for Ukraine. And I suspect that money has changed hands here. And that's one thing which really should be looked at and examined. Any way that Trump can basically he didn't have any trouble with Blumenthal, who, you know, faked his military record about Vietnam in his election, as General Flynn likes to mention. He does have a problem with Lindsey Graham. I believe that Graham is going to get primaried and tossed out in 2026 because MAGA is furious at him.
So you're talking about money changing hands. What's your thoughts on the Biden crime family's involvement with Burisma?
That's interesting, okay, because that in some respects is a protected operation of the Central Intelligence Agency. That's how come they got away with it. If you look at the board of Burisma that Hunter served on at the point that he was serving on that, he was also a member of the National Democratic Institute of basically Project Democracy and the National Endowment for Democracy. Kofor Black, the longtime CIA operative, was also on the Burisma board. The whole idea there was about natural gas, was about all this stuff that's being negotiated in the so-called Ukrainian minerals deal now. The parts of Ukraine which Russia wants is where all of that gas available for fracking actually is, which could, in the view of various Europeans and others, be a big blow to Russian gas interests, obviously, by creating an independent gas feed from Ukraine. That's what Burisma was all about. It was part of the payoff to Biden for actually being kind of the czar for Ukraine after the 2014 coup. And the reason why that has not been gone after is because it's an intelligence operation and it was protected all along for that particular reason. So everybody can yell about it, but basically until you get to the heart of what that was about, you're not going to get anywhere with it.
And what did you think of Hillary Clinton's obsession with Russiagate?
She's crazy. That's where we always start with Hillary. She's nuts. She couldn't stand Putin's macho-ness because she's an ardent, crazy feminist. And she was obsessed with talking about, what position each of their legs were in whenever basically they talked. She was basically a tool of the State Department, rather than being Secretary of State. And, all of these Anglo-American intelligence operations have three kind of prongs in the United States: the Central Intelligence Agency, the State Department, and the Pentagon. And, you know, Hillary was in an essential position in the State Department. She hated Putin because he was a manly man and, you know, ran around riding horses with a bare chest and all the other macho things he did, which from her standpoint were a crime against feminism. And, you know, she really thought of herself as one of these elites in the United States who were set up in government. And that's what she intended herself to be. And she adopted every single nostrum of the so-called post-war rules-based order. And she's completely freaked out because she spent her whole life actually serving this thing. And now it's disappearing throughout the world. As the population says, it's all BS. We don't believe it. We don't believe anything you people say anymore. And she blames Russia for that. They got a lot of money off the deal, certainly. And if you recall, the looting of Russia took place under the Clinton administration, which, you know, almost reduced Russia to nothing until Putin actually came in.
Yeah, I wrote a book called Clinton, Bush and CIA Conspiracies. I'll send you a copy if you've got an address. And I did a lot of research on the Clintons. She's a absolute psychopath. All right, so Sal wants to know, can Trump fold up NATO?
If the United States withdrew, yes. And that's something which we would like to see happen. He's asked the question, what the hell is the purpose of this thing? The Soviet Union is dead and gone. Why do we need it? It's simply a collective thing which can only seem to get in trouble, by provoking wars and doing that type of thing. So yeah, I think it's much more important to have, and Trump does too, nation-to-nation understandings, as opposed to having this bloc, which comes out of the old Cold War framework, trying to find an identity by launching new wars.
You got a few people asking for your thoughts on the WEF.
Terrible organization, but about to really go down the tube since Klaus seems to have messed around with the finances and messed around with the perversions which occur apparently when you get to be his age, and seems to have been discovered in that. Their programs have largely failed in the last period. And, you know, what I like to do is refer people to Trump's speeches there, which are right in your face in terms of the models of government, the nation state, which he advocates. He told them the future belongs to the patriots, not the globalists. And he walked in there and said exactly that. So it's an important coordination point for these, you know, elite crazies. So is the Bilderberg Society. So is the Trilateral Commission, which most people don't even realize still exists and is very active. But largely it's a club for central bankers and other wannabes to get together and try and determine the future direction of the world. And it's failing at this point drastically. So that's what it's about. Klaus Schwab comes out of the Harvard seminar series, actually run by Henry Kissinger, and William Yandel Elliott. And that in turn gave us our two horrible boys, both Kissinger and Brzezinski, who were monsters. It's that type of imperial viewpoint, which we're going to defeat at this point, and I'm very confident we can do it, but the people got to rise and they've got to become much, much more competent, much, much more learned, basically exert their will. And we're seeing that in the United States. We're seeing a huge sort of uprising of the grandest way, where people are awake. They're not going to sleep. They're watching this thing like a hawk. They're expressing themselves, and that's exactly what we want. We're fulfilling Benjamin Franklin's wish here, where he said, a republic, if you can keep it, well, that depends on everybody out there taking that responsibility to heart.
So when these globalist organizations start to fail, isn't that when we reach a point of maximum danger because they get desperate and they're likely to do anything?
That's exactly right. That's where we are now.
Okay. All right. We've got about 10 minutes or so left with Barbara Boyd, folks. And if you've not subscribed to Promethean Action, there is the link in the live chat. Link is also in the description box. It's a fascinating channel. I've been watching a lot. And get your final questions in, please, folks. So Michael wants to know, can't Trump go after companies like BlackRock? Is it the Sherman Act? Isn't there an anti-monopoly? When companies get so big, the government can break them up?
There is a major antitrust kind of movement taking place right now. The people that Trump has in the Justice Department are using both the Sherman and Clayton Acts. He's reorganized the Federal Trade Commission to do precisely that. And, you know, I think he's got a two-pronged strategy. The first one he would like to do is simply to capture these companies for his own purposes. And he seems to be on a campaign to actually do that. Come with me at this point, behave yourselves, and, you know, we can do things which will be profitable to everybody. If that doesn't work, he's got a club which he can use in the Justice Department and in the FTC to actually go after them. The Trump administration first term is who launched the entire antitrust lawsuits against Google and against Silicon Valley, which are just now coming to fruition. With respect to Larry Fink, I think Trump is out to basically potentially, you know, bankrupt BlackRock by his tariffs and other moves, which will leave that company on the short end of the stick. But we'll have to see how that plays out.
So it seems that we're able to say slightly more on YouTube this year than we were last year. Is that because of what Trump signed and the pressure on the tech companies from Trump?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that Elon's, you know, in history, aside from probably getting us to Mars, you know, basically, I think his primary note in history is going to be what he did by actually taking over X, opening it up as a platform, and creating a mess for these other, you know, entities which are into censorship and all that other stuff. And what you're seeing is very much a situation where if you're not actually allowing free speech here, you probably aren't going to survive. Every single media company, which is part of the propaganda apparatus, is in huge financial trouble right now. So that's why I think YouTube's doing what it's doing. And, you know, we don't see so much of the crazy. I mean, I've gotten like three or four of these crazy Wikipedia notices of, you know, conspiracy theory, that type of thing thrown at me. But otherwise, it's been pretty free. And if you know how to get around saying that you think the 2020 election was rigged rather than saying it was something else, you basically can play the game with the algorithms pretty well.
Yeah, I'm still getting screwed by Facebook, though. Bloody Zuckerberg. Oh, all right.
That's just not, I don't think that's going to change. I think they're going to ride that horse into the millennium. And I think that I think they're in bad shape as a result.
He's ready to go in his bunker when all this escalates, isn't he? So right. Tor, question from Tor. Barbara, what's your overarching perspective on Sweden's role in international affairs?
It's like most of Europe, it's a captive at this point. You know, it's a captive of this entity we call the deep state or NATO. And, you know, it used to have something of a role back in the Cold War where, you know, it was kind of neutral and played an interesting intellectual role in the dialogue between the Soviet Union and the rest of the world. But it's been captive for a long, long time. You know, and I'm not up on where it currently stands and all the uproar which is going on in Europe. You know, I'm pretty familiar with the German situation. I'm pretty familiar with the French situation. I'm pretty familiar with the Polish situation. Finland and Sweden remain something, you know, of a mystery to me, and I haven't been able to get into that. But that's something I'll certainly take a look at. It's an interesting question.
Next question is, would you say it's already gone nuclear with hitting the shell around Chernobyl?
I wouldn't really say that. I mean, and as I emphasized before, there's a weapon which the Russians have at this point, which is, you know, not much more powerful than in many respects than a nuclear weapon because of its precision. You know, you can knock stuff out without spreading radioactivity all over the place and suffering the consequences of that. Obviously, hitting Chernobyl and playing with the game of who done it with, you know, spreading radioactivity is a nuclear game and is extraordinarily dangerous. But, you know, I think that was a game which was being played around Biden. I don't think that's necessarily the game which is going to be played around Trump.
Yeah, I remember when there was the original Chernobyl incident and that it spread all over Europe, the radiation. Right. All right, so next question is, what about the French situation? Would love to know Barbara's views. I mean, they want to escalate as well, don't they? There's peculiar leadership over there.
Who's running France? Is it Macron or the woman who slapped him in the face? That's my question. I mean, look, everything that's going on in Europe right now is, despite the fact that they say Russia is authoritarian and fascist, they are increasingly fascist. And there's no other word for it. You know, what happens when you do what's been done to Marie Le Pen, frame her up, do this crazy prosecution, which they did of her at a point where, again, you know, the party of Le Pen clearly is much more favored by the population than the globalist Macron. So you've got the potential populist movement all over Europe right now. So far, it's being suppressed. And the problem with all of this is really our problem here out in the population. You know, Friedrich Schiller said of the French Revolution, which was supposed to replicate the great American Revolution, that's what it had all the key actors like Lafayette and others involved in it. He said, a great moment in history found a small people. That's a very accurate assessment of, you know, what we have to do on our side of the equation rather than take in information and get ticked off and rage at the computer and throw our shoes at it and all this other stuff. We've got to get our heads together and actually work towards exactly what happened in the American victory of November 5th, 2024. A great movement came together and acted on a program which is replicatable in many, many other nations if people take a look at, you know, what Trump's Republican platform actually was. It's a program for massive economic growth led by the forgotten people of the United States, i.e. the workers and middle classes. And the idea is we want to become a productive people again. We don't want to basically be watching the stock market and hearing that ding, 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 ding as the background of our lives. That's like being in a gambling casino forever. We want to go out and make things. We want to build things. We want to make things better. We want to be able to say to our children, I did that. I built that. That's me. That's what we built. That's what our generation did. And most people under this regime have lost their sense of purpose and lost their sense of mission. So, you know, what we need to do is very similar to the type of thing that John F. Kennedy set off when he told the American people, let's go to the moon. Now, there's a lot of nonsense out there about how that never happened. That's BS. It did happen. And, you know, for a little girl like me sitting there, I said, I want to be an astronomer. I want to go to the moon. It had an enormous impact on how I actually looked at the world. It was exciting. It was, you know, new, you know, and that's the kind of thing we need to have in our younger people at this point, not drugs, not porn, not all of the nonsense that they're actually subjected to. We need to invigorate the mind and invigorate the will and make ourselves stronger and go back here in the United States to this idea, like the astronauts, of having the right stuff, of having the right stuff. And making a real renaissance in humanity, which is what we need at this point, requires all of us having the right stuff.
Yeah, well said. Matilda wants to know, is China posturing to take Taiwan?
China's not posturing. They believe Taiwan is part of China, which is why we've actually had, you know, this ambiguous type of strategy. I think all of this stuff can be solved if we actually have this idea of the four powers rather than what has been the imperial scheme of taking the potential group of nations which could actually overcome their power and putting them at each other's throats. And that's typical counterinsurgency strategy. So that's what we've got to overcome. And it involves a completely different culture. I think the Chinese social credit policy is an abomination, and it's what's led to all of this censorship in the so-called more advanced countries. I have lots of problems in thinking about China, but I really don't want to go to war with them. And I think that the Taiwan issue is being flamed up to actually become something like that.
Barbara, huge thank you for spending time with us today. We appreciate you sharing your knowledge. Is there anything you would like to say in conclusion to the viewers? I mean, a lot of people are afraid right now that this could really get out of hand and go nuclear.
Mr. LaRouche always said that the best thing you can do in this type of crisis is reach for serenity. Listen to some Bach, listen to some classical music. Let that actually govern your thinking. Get yourself straight. And this will work out. It's very scary, I agree. You know, basically they're pushing all of our buttons here. But I have to believe that, you know, once you survive an assassination, that, you know, you really look and you say, God gave me a purpose here. And I think that's what President Trump is doing. He is absolutely opposed to nuclear war. That's what drives him. He talks about his Uncle John all the time, who told him, was a big scientist at MIT, who told him all about nuclear weapons and what they could do to the world and how they could end it. And that is a core feature of his being. So we just have to basically get mobilized behind stopping this thing and, you know, taking this deep state down. We've just posted on Promethean Action a statement by General Flynn, which talks about all of this, and we heartily endorsed his statement. If you go to the site, it's well worth your read.
All right. Huge thank you for coming on. I'm going to close the show, let you go, get on with your day. But would love to speak to you soon. You take care, Barbara. Cheers.
You too. Great talking to you all.
Thank you. Bye-bye. What a phenomenal guest, folks. And put a one in the chat if you'd like to see Barbara come back on. And she has co-presenters as well who are also power speakers. And with this situation, the way it's developing, we're going to reach out to some of our other geopolitical commentators. I can see it's all ones coming back in. Everyone really appreciating Barbara. The Barbara's link that I'm putting in the live chat again. So please subscribe. And if you go over to Barbara's channel, you know, send her some love from this channel. It'll incentivize her to come back on. So tomorrow we have got Kit Clarenberg coming on because the male models to do with Keir Starmer are in court. We've tentatively got it scheduled for 4. We will see what happens. I know minds were blown last night by Zachary, the ex-Satanist. He lost his connection 2 hours in, but he has agreed to come back on. I think it's going to be in about 2 weeks' time. Maybe Friday the 13th would be an appropriate night for that one. So we will be continuing the streams with Zachary. I know Jen, my partner, listened, and all of our, you know, the thing he said about the ritualistic late term stuff. Oh, all of our heads were about to explode at that point. It really affected me. But yeah, such an honest guy. He's been through a lot. The candor, I think one of the best guests we've ever had on. So we've got Kit, we've got Zachary coming back, and we're going to get lots more lined up in the meantime. So take care, folks, wherever you are in the world. Hope to see some of you soon.